All right, our clock is way off, so we apologize for people who normally would be tuning in going, why are they playing the news at 7:30 in the morning when it was supposed to run at 7? So if you're just joining us, Mike Johnson, who is over at the World Hockey Championships, could essentially only had about a 15-minute window for it, and it came up at, well, 5 to 7. He said, I'm ready to go now. Here's my window. So that's the reason we're kind of behind on our clock.
Yeah.
So we apologize for that in terms of where you're at, if your day is kind of screwed up, but we're a little bit back on track now. It's 7:32. Thanks to Mike again for checking in. And again, he'll have the call with Gord Miller at 9:20 this morning of Canada, Sweden from the World Hockey Championships. And we'll simulcast it right here on TSN 1200. Now, a couple of people, more than a few people, have texted in and seen a few tweets as well. So I referenced the Claude Giroux comments.
Is that real?
Well, apparently not. And if that's the case, well, first of all, I found it so shocking, yeah. Right? Because that just does not seem like Claude Giroux.
Yeah.
And I do, believe it or not, folks, I do pride myself in being accurate or trying to be accurate on things, especially when it comes to things like this. And I believed that to be from an accurate source. I don't remember where I saw it, but it wasn't like I picked it up off whatever fakehockeyrumors.com whatever.
Yeah.
So that apparently is not, that is a made up quote because it didn't make sense. So I apologize. Yeah. I don't like to do stuff like that. So, and I'll be texting Mike to let him know that that is not a real quote because it's hard to believe Claude Giroux would sewer.
I'm only laughing because I went with it yesterday on Twitter.
Oh, no.
And I said, I've heard the same thing.
Oh, dear.
And I meant that more in a reference that I know he likes Florida. And I had it up for about 2 minutes.
Wow.
Sure, my source was like gritty somebody. And so I just said, hey, get a close.
Anyway,
that now apologies
to all the Flyers fans.
Yeah,
there,
and I have heard, though, that, you know, again, not to that, and he didn't say that, and Claude's a real quality guy. But, you know, I've heard, hey, he really likes it in Florida. Very serious group. I think the real question is, do they have room for him? I would not doubt JR, to be quite honest with you, that he probably wants to stay there. You'd look at this and say, hey, you know, who are you going to pick and choose? Are you going to go doing the bang, you know, bouncing around like Jerome Iginla? So I would assume for Claude Giroux, if it fits and there is the opportunity contractually, I wouldn't be surprised at all that he stays in Florida.
Yeah. So that part of a separate quote. In terms of his expressing a desire, and he's in the Florida market, right?
Yeah.
But him expressing a desire of he thought his time in Florida was great, the guys are great.
Yeah.
He did sound very much open to the idea of returning to the Panthers. So I think that part of it is true.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Flyer part is not.
So. No, but and as I said, they have a good program, and there have been players, and I go back to kind of Gretzky in St. Louis, and he's kind of like, and that was Mike Keenan, like, hey, man, this is not good. In the case of Claude Giroux, he's like, hey, we got a really good group here. They're very serious. I know that sounds strange, but, you know, Claude Giroux, you'd sense that right away. You know, Barkov and Huberto, Ekblad, all the guys there really want to win, and that checks a lot of boxes, not to mention a good hockey team and a great place to play.
Okay, all right. I'm a little out of sorts now. Our clock is off and whatever, but one thing I did want to get to this hour, so I'm glad that we have some semblance of an hour, is...
Yeah.
Pierre Dorion's visit yesterday on In the Box with A.J. Jakubik and his good friend and golf compadre, Brad Fritch, co-hosted yesterday. Pierre was good enough to give us some time with an update on several topics yesterday. First of all, just to take care of some business as far as the injuries are concerned, all of that appears to be positive. In fact, I think we were talking yesterday about Matt Murray, right? And he said he had run into Matt Murray in the building. Because I think he said that Matt Murray's power was out, so he'd come into the building. But it looks like everything is on course for Matt Murray in terms of his return from a concussion, and that he will be good to go for. He talked about Pierre Dorion was talking about Matt Murray very much. You know, training camp next year. There is no sense at all of, you know, because people have brought up the idea of buyouts or if you could a trade or whatever. There is no hesitation when Pierre Dorion's talking about Matt Murray in particular, other than he's going to be at training camp next year to start the season with the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, and right now he's the backup goaltender, Jer. If he can be healthy, play like the stretch that started in Washington on. But the other thing, people would be very naive to think, hey, this is also coming in and bringing some good energy, working hard, being part of the group. Because I would tell you right now, if we're getting off to a good start, if that energy and the proper focus isn't there, I wouldn't be shocked in it for a second they don't put him back in Belleville and allow it to be Forsberg and Gustafson. So the ball is in his court, and in this particular case, and now you can take the injuries, but I don't think the athlete has lived up to the expectations in the contract. So, hey, better do a lot of work this summer and come back ready to rock and roll. And if you do, that should be a really nice goaltending tandem if they both play at the peak that they played this past year.
So on Tim Stützle, of course, injured again for Germany at the World Hockey Championships, it would appear that it is, first of all, it's the same sort of injury as he suffered in the Montreal game versus Suzuki. He called it about a two-week injury. So this is something that really shouldn't really impact his summer training at all. So that is good news on that front. Finally, on Jake Sanderson, who of course suffered the hand injury in his final days at North Dakota and was never able to make it into anything other than a handful of practices, light practices with the Sens at the end of the season. That recovery also on track, and he should be at development camp, which we presume is going to be sometime in July, and then be ready to go for training camp coming up in September.
Yeah, and caught that. I was just kind of running some errands, so that was about the point I tuned in. And one of my thoughts was, hey, would he end up playing in the World Junior? But I would assume that's not the case. It wouldn't make a whole lot of sense, JR. So, hey, the whole focus and the key is it leads into some of the other things there. I mean, I think if you want to talk about the defense, they are penciling this guy in to be a top four defenseman next year. I think if you be honest about the depth chart, that that's one of the things that they're assuming can happen right away. Not that he's coming in to save the day, and that's where the intrigue for me, as I'll call them the big three, is how they may finish off that other spot.
All right, so that is the update on the injury. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of the so-called hard news from that. But the rest of it, which we're going to delve into right now, and what we've done is we've taken a series of kind of three different questions and answers regarding which what I think is maybe topic A among Senator fans right now in terms of looking ahead to what's going to happen this summer with an eye toward next season with the team, and that is the number 7 draft pick that Ottawa holds right now, and that, you know, there has been very widely reported, and in fact, Pierre Dorion has talked in previous interview opportunities about the potential that pick could be in play. So what we have here is a series of three different answers regarding the pick being in play, as well as kind of what they would be looking for, as well as his thoughts on the type of player available should they stick and pick at number 7. Here is Pierre Dorion yesterday here on TSN 1200.
Obviously, we'd like to add a top four defenseman, but those don't grow on trees. And as I said previously, I think every team that pretty much needed a top four defenseman went and got one before the playoffs started and paid a significant price for it. Obviously, we also need to add some depth up front and some scoring up front. And those are two things that we know that we have to do internally. And whether it's, you know, sacrificing prospects, picks, current players to upgrade, you know, within our own lines, our own roster, that's something that we'll look at in the off season. Maybe this is the year that we sacrifice, that we move pick 7 to get an impact player that can help us right away. We're not going to go and get a guy that's, you know, a pending UFA in a year's time. I don't think that'd be really smart for us to do, but if we can get a guy that we know we will have some control over for, you know, more than a few years, then that's an option. That's something we definitely look at. And, you know, it's no secret that we have a lot of good young players, but adding an impact player or someone that could come in and help us get to that next level is something that we'll definitely look at. Up to number 7, you know, you're going to get a good player. There's no doubt about that. We'll see how the list falls after this week and after we sit down at the combines, after we do some interviews. We might bring some players into Ottawa, so we'll have a better idea if we spend some time with them. But from seeing what I've seen through the year, discussing with Trent Mann, we're going to get a good player. I wouldn't say we're going to get a superstar, but we're going to get a good NHL player, whether that's Whether that's, you know, a top six forward, top four D, I know at the end of the line that player will fill that role for sure once he's reached full maturity. It's doubtful that he plays for us next year, but, you know, depending who the player is, he could play for us in 2 years from now.
All right, so there is Sens GM Pierre Dorion here on TSN 1200 yesterday. If you want to hear the interview in its entirety, by the way, posted on our website at tsn1200.ca. So kind of lots to go through there. But just on the idea of potentially trading the number 7 pick for a player, again, this is for me, Simmer, further evidence. Like this is not a general manager who's hiding his cards here. Mm-hmm. This is him hanging the for sale sign on the number 7 pick in the draft in a very public way time and time again. Hey, other general managers, what do you got to trade? Yeah. I got the number 7 pick here.
Yeah, and you would see circumstance, JR, or hey, you don't kid yourself. I think jobs are on the line to get to a start, but I don't feel like it's also being forced. I don't feel like it's one of those ones you're sitting there and saying, oh, my God, what are you doing? Now, there's lots of layers to this in a sense of, I think where the program is at right now, you're absolutely accurate. I don't think there's an issue with it at all. The question really becomes, what is the relevance? And I've been in this seat many times of, what do your scouts think of number 7? You got a pretty good idea. You'll go about 10 deep on a list right now. Are you in love with somebody you're going to get at 7? How you feel? But more importantly, how the hell does the rest of the hockey world feel about number 7 pick? I mean, my automatic link and everything he says leads you right to Mr. Fiala and what's happening in Minnesota. So the Fiala part, it's not perfect, but I understand it. You had 85 points. You got control of them. But what did the Minnesota Wild think of the number 7 pick? So those are the layers to it. But I would say there's a pretty good feel from that you've got one foot out the door. And in trying to match that up, JR, the simple reality is it's a lot easier to find that top six forward using a pick than it is to find the magical Mark Mathot right-handed defenseman out there, you know? And what do teams, like most teams would be like, well, okay, I got my top four mature mid-20s right-shot defenseman. I'm going to give you that for the number 7 pick for an 18-year-old that might play in 2 years, might play in 5 years, might never play. So lots of layers to it.
Absolutely. So on the number 7 pick, that was the latter part of the comment that we played right there, just on I guess the quality of or the depth of the top end of the first round. I mean, he acknowledged that you're not going to get a superstar player. Yeah. He said, you get a good player. You'll get a very good player that will play in the NHL. But, you know, that's him publicly acknowledging that they will not be able to pluck, you know, unless somebody magically falls somehow, they're not going to pluck a superstar player out of the number 7 pick. Mm-hmm. So they've also kind of said right there, you don't have to read the tea leaves, that he is not of the belief that this number 7 pick is going to be helping them anytime soon. In fact, he talked, right? A couple of years before possibly even that player helped. And as you have said, and many people have said now, the rubber is meeting the road. This team needs to start making significant progress in the standings. They need to get off to a better start. And not only that, they need to be playing the entire year for a playoff spot or be in a playoff spot. Because if they don't, you know, we've got a coach and a general manager that are now into, well, respectively, what, 4 and 5 seasons now with an organization that's never made the playoffs. And we've got now a changing dynamic, we'll put it that way, potentially with ownership. Yeah. Like everything is on the line right now. And so you would understand why there is a sense of urgency from the general manager right now as to the future of his team.
Yeah, very much so. And you go back to 2020 and Jack Quinn was the 8th pick overall. Well, that's not that kind of draft year. So how do your scouts now? Eye on that side, and this is the fun, we can talk till 9:20 about it. Hey, they are an excellent drafting team. I know last year with Boucher, we'll see what, but overall, man's work, I have absolute confidence in that. And where they're at right now, I agree with everything that's going on. The question is, on the professional side, the trades back to, you know, the Stone and Brännström, all that, there's a layer here that you can't sit there and say you're absolutely confident. I'm confident in the move. Who is the player? When are you going to do it? And this is also, there's a lot of pressure right now because I have not seen anything unveiled. I'm assuming their thought process is that, hey, basically our marketing this summer is going to be a couple of moves here. How does your fan base feel about those moves? How does that react? Does that start moving the needle on the business side? So that's a really interesting dynamic as well, JR. Mm-hmm. But the timing of where the team is at, but then I'll go back to the defensive part. And again, maybe Zaitsev's deal to the desert, the dump is already there and they know they got it. It would just add to me that if they don't, it would be absolutely perplexing to me why you took Hamonic at a third-round pick, paying him $1 million July 1st. The whole word is he could play with Sanderson and Shabbat. Well, now you're looking for a top-four defenseman, but let's see how it plays out before training camp. To my point of, you've layered money there, and in my estimation between, you know, I won't put Hamonic, but Zaitsev, Tube White, two right now where things are at with Matt Murray along with Delzato. You got $18 million that's tied up in bad money. And how do you move that all around now and fill a couple of those holes? I'm really interested, not to mention what the hell the budget is for players this year.
Kind of going back to garbage bag day, and Pierre Dorion readily admitted, and it sounded like Thomas Chabot was maybe more forceful in his comments, but Brady Tkachuk referenced it as well, and the general manager acknowledged it. We need to bring in players. We need players that can help us now. Like the cry for help from the locker room was made very clear to the general manager, and now the general manager is making very clear in his public comments that he is listening to what his team leaders are saying. And, you know, it's one thing to say you'd like to do this. It's another thing to actually have it happen. You know, you can always, you know, trade picks and top prospects for garbage. That deal will always be available from your other general managers, who are always more than willing to throw you an anchor.
Big time.
But, you know, can you make a good deal? Yeah. That still has to happen. Well, yeah. I don't doubt for a second, based on everything that I have heard now since the season ended, they're very much open for business. Yeah. And I think to your point of what's their marketing plan this summer, their marketing plan is, the core that they've got, mm-hmm. signing Josh, getting Josh Norris signed, mm-hmm. but B, it's making a big splash somehow, some way coming. I don't believe it will be via free agency. I guess it's always a possibility, but in more probability via a trade of either the number 7 pick or a top prospect, mm-hmm. or maybe it's a couple of players for a combination thereof. Because he talked about the number 7 pick. He talked about top prospects. And he talked about current roster players as well. Everything is on the table for the Ottawa Senators this summer.
Yeah, I agree, Jerry. And I'd also say, and again, this is trying to quantify, but we can say, number 7 pick for Fiala, and then everybody gets in debate. Minnesota would say, listen, the guy had 85 points last year. He's a young guy. Now, the contract is an issue going forward. How long do you lock him up? I'm assuming he's, what, a $6.5, $7 million player? Do you have the dough to do that with he and Norris? Now, all of a sudden, you got 5 guys when Stutzla comes around making some pretty big dough. You'd have to run the numbers, JR. And that part to me, and that's why I point to Fiala, because that would be sexier. It would be easier. It would be marketable. And he's a very good hockey player. We can get into questions if you get to the playoffs. Well, you're not there. And I'll also say this from Brady Tkachuk's side. I think they've done great with Brady. Brady's done great with them. They paid him a real good contract. They've had Norris and Batherson. They've really loaded his lineup. Thomas Chabot's history, going back to leaving DeMello or getting rid of DeMello and carting in Zaitsev and forcing that. And then I'll say from Chabot, and he has to be better in some areas, and I think he'll be fine, JR. But you saw the solution. The solution was he and Zub, within 2 minutes of practice, are a top-pairing defenseman in the National Hockey League, but I don't got enough to spread around. Just like when Carlson and Mathot were here, that solution of, okay, I can put Zub with Chabot, but who the hell is going to play with Sanderson? Well, you're already admitting personally that Hamonic's not the guy. You don't have the guy internally. So that is the multi-million dollar question of who can you find? Because I would personally, and I said this yesterday, I would start Zub with Sanderson for a smooth transition. And I do even think long-term, JR, that might be your ultimate pairing against top, you know, players mm-hmm. and other teams. Can you find that solution? Thomas Chabot needs help, you know, and he's played a lot. There's no doubt. And go back to Eric Carlson. And I'm not saying that, you know, but Mark Mathot allowed him to do a lot of things. It hasn't worked well with Chabot, and you have not protected. And in my estimation, I'm not saying he's frustrated, but you need to do better on your $64 million investment.
So, and this is where it becomes interesting, because that elusive top four defenseman that the general manager has said that he is very much looking for, first of all, they're hard to come by. If you want him to be a right shot to play with either Thomas Chabot or Jake Sanderson, preferably, that makes it even more difficult, the top four right shot defenseman. and you're talking about sacrificing your top pick or your prospects. Here is, if this deal is going to happen, and you brought up Mark Methot's name a million times, and you know, a Mark Methot player, I think we all agree when he played with Erik Karlsson, was money, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not just saying that because Mark's probably listening
now.
No, for
sure, yeah.
Right?
He was
awesome in that position. But Mark Methot, in and of himself, is not a sexy hockey player.
No. He's a sexy man.
A sexy man, but not a sexy hockey player.
Yeah, yeah.
So here is what the potential of what I think might happen is that you are looking at potentially trading the number 7 overall pick for a Mark Methot type of player. So it's not a defenseman that's coming in that has the glitz and glamour of 50, 60, 70-point player. It might be a guy who's a 25 or a 30-point player because we're all fixated on points, even among defensemen. But more importantly, you're looking at a player who can be a fit into your top four with what you have right now, which is Thomas Chabot, specifically on the left side, Thomas Chabot, and what you hope it would be a rapidly emerging Jake Sanderson. And finding the perfect fourth, if you also slot Zub into one of those two spots on the right side, that may not be the sexy player because I can picture it right now. A trade is made. They have found this magical right shot top four defenseman. It is a kind of a clone of a Mark Methot, and the reaction is going to be, you traded the number 7 overall pick for that?
Yeah.
He's got 25 points, but that player is so crucial to what, that type of player is so crucial to what the Ottawa Senators really need.
Yeah.
I am already picturing what the reaction is going to be. I don't have any names for anybody. It'll be fun to kind of in the next month or two, next 6 weeks, to go through the rosters and find and look at a team and say maybe that type of player shakes free. But that is my sense of it right now, that if they're going to make a trade, it's not going to be for, if it's not for a Kevin Fiala type, it's not going to be for a sexy defenseman that everybody is, the first reaction is going to be, That doesn't seem like a very good trade.
Yeah.
I'm already hearing it right now.
Yeah, and let's go back to the defenseman discussion, Jared. First of all, you have to, as a staff and with your coach, get away from the idea that a left shot can't play the right side. Don't limit yourself to the ridiculous notion of that. It makes no sense. What you want to find, and I don't know if Mark Methot back in the day skated in Ottawa with Erik Karlsson, whatever it was, they were very methodical in what they did. When Kuba scrambled and went to Florida, you realize, and Chabot isn't Karlsson, but he's darn close to here. I don't need to bring in, you know, people. I don't need to bring in Cale Makar. You know what I mean? I know that's not happening, but you know what I mean? Just find the fit. Now, the question is, you never know. And that's the other difficult part about this whole process. I can find the next Mark Methot, but for some reason it doesn't work. Who would have thought that Jeff Bukemun, who couldn't play in the league, would hop in with Brian Leetch and have a great career? So on one hand, it's easier, but you have to go through a process. And, hey, they also gave up a very good player in Foligno. I mean, I would have looked at it from Columbus and said, well, that's a hell of a lot better. You've drafted, developed. This guy's already a top 9 forward. What did he do? He went top 6. He became an all-star in a light way, but a 30-goal scorer. So, yeah, trying to identify that, but also what makes me nervous is, hey, from a forward group, here's a couple things. I think in duos that Norris and Tkachuk should make another player better. I think in duos that Batherson and Stutzla should make other players better. Everybody wants that next guy, Jer. I'm not sure that when those players and the allocation of salary, you need that, but you need that right now. So let's see what ends up happening. And then just back to the defense, the swings and misses on defensemen is off the charts of their inability
pro defense.
Oh my gosh. Like, well, even, well,
yeah, even draft and develop. Yeah. You're true. We got maybe a couple coming and we'll get to their clip in just a second.
And they're going to be fine. And I think a more likely scenario, and this is just Sean Simpson's take, is that the Fiala number 7 and something, I do think one of, and I won't say the word, well, sacrifice, but I think Thompson or Bernard Docker are out the door. You've got Hamonic already. I don't even see where the slot is.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be the one that involves where a team that's up against a cap may say, okay, you know, we got to reload here. These guys are pretty mature. Either of them could probably play right away. Would you look at something? But when you go through the Zaitsev and then this Hamonic and then keep going down, it's, I think, very rightful would fans be a little nervous right now, their inability to, and if they swing and miss on this one, well, that's a catastrophic.
Yeah.
The part of filling that, JR, will either give you, take you, I don't want to say to the promised land, forward progress, or it will be the collapsing of what's going on. It's that pivotal of a move.
Right. So on the defense piece itself, and it's interesting you brought up that one of JBD and or Lassie Thompson may be trade bait this summer. Here is a kind of a separate clip from Pierre Dorion from yesterday when asked kind of his assessment of the seasons of Lassie Thompson and JBD. Of course, we saw both of them in the NHL. But by and large, down in Belleville, here's his assessment of those two players.
Obviously, Lassie probably had a better first half than second half. But in the last month, Bernard Docker, and through the two games in the playoffs I was there, Bernard Docker was their best defenseman. So both, I think, are knocking at the door of the NHL. It's not the worst thing to overdevelop a defenseman. So when when you call them back up and when they're here, they'll be here for the long run. At times last year, Lassie was leaking a bit of oil, and at times it was too much for Bernard Docker. But that's, you know, they're not the same players at the upcoming training camp. They won't be the same players that they were during the year last year. They will both have taken a step. So it's just, you know, we'll see how the chips may fall. Those two guys have top four potential.
All right, so that was part of the comment again on those two players. I also brought up Max Gwinnett as well, who's a right shot defenseman who they were really pleased by his progress, but on those two in particular, because what I have seen a lot in, you know, everybody's kind of penciling in a defense for next year. A lot of people have put one or both of those guys, Lassie and JBD, mm-hmm. on the Sens defense next season. Those comments from the general manager right there tell me that he has put neither of those two guys in pen on the Sens roster for next season, which leads me to believe that if you're not thinking that one of those two guys can make the leap next year, or you're not willing to say that, and there's no reason for him to make it up, that you're very much in the market for a player. Like that, what that says right now is neither of those guys, you know, they could surprise at training camp, but as he tries to make his team this summer at the draft, or in more likelihood trading the pick or making a trade at the draft, that is when that defense is going to be filled out. It is not going to be filled out with one of Lassie Thompson or Jacob Bernard Docker. That whole better to be overripe down in the minors, because when we bring them up, they're ready to go. That was a very telling comment to me.
Yeah, and I'll take it a bit of a different turn, JR, is that I think both are ready to play, and in the way they've drafted and developed, they've done a really good job. Now, one thing you don't want to do is hand jobs over to defensemen when you're trying to make it. But let's also be honest with ourselves. Pierre Dorion's kind of made his bed. If I'm chasing a top four defenseman, chances are maybe Brännström. But in the defense that is here right now, let's look at this thing. Like, listen, you've got Zub and Shabbat. You've got Sanderson coming in. He's a rock star. He's going to slide right in. I've still got Zaitsev and Hamonic, not to mention Brännström, Holden, and let's get into old Delzato. Hey, where's the room? Where's the spot? And then I'll go back to kind of exhaust it. It just makes it, and I've used this term before, the Hamonic is a block right now. Hamonic is a spot that'll probably be a sixth defenseman. And do you pair him with Brännström? Or do you play Brännström all of a sudden? Is it Holden? How do you do this? That's a slot where JBD or Thompson should have been sliding into. You transition one of them with Holden. You end up having Sanderson with Zub, and you find the guy with Shabbat. But right now, Jerry, you've made your financial bed. Of course I'm not going to do that. But that doesn't mean that they're not ready. It tells me that you got a lot of cash on the books in the case of Zaitsev and Delzato, and to some extent having traded for Hamonic, who the coach said, and I believe, and the general manager said, may play with Sanderson, may play with Shabbat. Well, I think we've realized that there's a pretty good chance
that's not the case. Well, if you're chasing a top 4D, then you're saying that Hamonic's not in your top he's not in your top four.
Well, exactly. And that's when that move was made, and the little short sample size was Shabbat. So, hey, and also to the players, listen, I got to win right now, but there's been a layer here that's created a roadblock for what you would like to map out. But having said that, they still, no matter what, and this is the other part too. We get into these discussions, Jared, and you say it all the time, like with fourth line players. If you find that guy and you got a top four defense finally, who the hell is in your 5 and 6 isn't going to factor in your hockey club? You know, it will long term. But that slot and ability to fill that's make or break for the Ottawa Senators next year.
As it sits right now, so I think to start last year, I think the coaching staff certainly, and you know, the general manager may have slightly differed on it, on Eric Brännström. The coaching staff, not big fans of the player. Very much, I think, as the season went on, kind of came around. I'm not sure how far, but came around on the player, and the general manager's comments at the end of the season You know, he's, you know, he said he sees him on the team next year. Now, you can say a lot of things publicly. What does that all mean? But, you know, Eric Brandstrom is an RFA. It's not going to be hard to get a contract for him at this stage. But if you have an offer on the table of Brandstrom, Bernhard Docker, or Lassie Thompson, which of those three do you think, and it's a purely guess on your part, but which of those three do you think has the most value amongst other general managers? Is it the player in Brandstrom that has played in the NHL kind of fairly full-time in the NHL this year? You kind of see what you have, or is it more the promise of one of the other two guys?
Oh, I personally, and I think other pro scouts feel the same way, Jared, not even close. I don't think people look at Brandstrom. If you're saying that's a bottom-pairing defenseman, 5'8", and for what he brings, he's a player. Oh, it has to be Thompson in that. And also, go fast-forward to opening night next year. Okay, you're going to play Sanderson, you're going to play Shabbat. Are you going to Nick Holden and tell him he's not playing opening night over Eric Brandstrom? Like, some of it doesn't match up or make sense. So, no, and from a standpoint of if Brandstrom could be involved in solving the issue with either of those two spots, you do that in a heartbeat.
Holden, Brandstrom, Hamonic, those three names right there, that feels like the 5, 6, 7 to me. Some combination thereof is the bottom pairing with the, you know, sort of the extra.
No, I agree.
Delzato, I don't know what's happening there.
And don't forget Zaitsev.
Yeah, well, Zaitsev is out the door. I think most people would like to see that. Now, whether that can happen or not is a totally different thing. But, again, the comments are suggesting very much that either they've got a deal in the books or they feel like they're going to be able to get rid of that contract. That's my feel on that part of it. So you've got a top three right now of Shabbat, Sanderson, and Zub. And that's where that top four defenseman they keep coming back to time and time again. That's the fourth slot that's filled.
And it's fun, Jer, because we're only in May, but it gets the juices flowing. And the other part, I don't have a problem if Hamonic comes back, and by Christmas time you transition in JBD or Thompson. And also say the same thing, a big decision on Connor Brown will be either extend him or stay true to yourself. And if Ridley Gregg comes in and plays well by Christmas time, slide him in that spot and move Brown. But you have to make these decisions this summer on those are really key spots on how you're going to transition guys through. And in the case of the defense, and you know, like I said, that I don't mind that per se, but I don't, that wasn't the rationale for giving up a third round pick for paying a guy $1 million signing bonus July 1st to just kind of create more clutter in the closet.
If Kevin Fiala is coming to town and he's getting paid $7 million or whatever the amount is, I don't foresee any way that Connor Brown, as a pending UFA, who probably can get close to $5 million, is going to be here. The math just doesn't work.
No, and then that's where, I understand that part of it. But you also have to make a decision on don't let him walk out the door next year on a marginal playoff team. There's some real value there. Yep. We look at the playoffs right now, and I'll go to Paul and Kopp and everything else. There's no reason at all that Connor Brown shouldn't get your first-round pick at the deadline next year.
Okay, thoughts on any of that? Welcome. You can text us at 12-1200, tweet at us at TSN 1200. Again, you can find the comments of Pierre Dorion on our website at tsn1200.ca. Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question, based on Dorian's comments, what should the Sens do with a number 7 pick? Make the pick, trade it for a top 6, or trade it for a top 4 defenseman? Let us know what you think at tsn1200.ca. We'll continue the discussion in the next hour. Again, just joining us, our clock is all over the place. Mike Johnson had to pop on early, so our usual 8 o'clock guest was on at 7 o'clock. If you missed it, have we posted it? Mike Johnson's visit with us is posted on the website and on our TSN 1200 Twitter as well. We'll come back, continue the discussion, get to your reaction as well on the Dorion comments and much more. Don't forget, we got Canada-Sweden for you at 9:20 this morning. World Hockey Championship quarterfinal on Sports Radio TSN 1200.